Are we recording?
Yes.
Every time?
Every time. There's someone else in the studio right now with us.
He's just weird.
I can feel his presence.
Shout out to Brian. Brian's waving at everybody.
Hello. My name is Mauro.
And I'm Dan.
And this is
Cool Animal People.
Featuring Brian in the corner room.
Featuring Brian's physical presence.
Shout out to Brian, our Brooklyn manager, for staring at us while we're recording the intro. We just had a super nerdy, fantastic, and incredible conversation with the CEO and founder of Companion,
John Hontaru.
Yeah, we got it. We got his name. We got his name after like three or four
times. It took me a few times. I was super nervous saying it the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't want to botch it.
What do you say? Ukrainian kangaroo?
Yeah, Hontaru.
Hontaru.
Yeah. I don't get the Ukrainian part.
Me neither, but let's just... We roll with it. What is Companion?
Companion is basically a robot that's going to teach.
Not basically.
No, it is a robot.
It's a robot.
It's a robot that's going to train your dog. And now I'm sure you might be skeptical. I was skeptical at first too. I'm pretty sold on this product. It's not going to replace you as an owner. It's going to enhance your relationship. And I know I sound like I'm working with their PR team on this.
Yeah, just a little COA for everyone listening.
What's COA?
Like cover our asses.
Oh, okay.
Bleep. No, we can curse here.
It's our podcast.
We don't sponsor products. You know, we don't get paid.
If we endorse something, it's because we genuinely like
and
it.
Usually like when we have people on, like Andrew Gill from Pet Pulse, like, We think these are cool products.
Yeah,
to
we
talk
don't,
about
this is on. If none of you were listening, this would literally just be me and Mauro in the room talking. Like we would do this regardless.
So, John Hontaru, the CEO and founder, right? Founder of Companion. We went through the technology inside of it.
This is a very tech heavy podcast.
If you're a nerd like us. And you know what a LiDAR scanner is? Founder and CEO, John Hontaru. You will absolutely super enjoy this conversation. Like, this is the Tesla of, like, dog tech.
Yeah. No, honestly, this is, I think, you know, we see a lot of technology pertaining to dogs, cats. Yeah. I think this is probably the most advanced piece of technology that people can have in their home, sort of buying, like,
first
an ultrasound kit. Yeah, they have created a new category.
We don't get many of those.
No.
First to market. Very cool.
Zero to one.
Yeah, and we actually got to talk to the CEO, who is super knowledgeable.
And incredibly nice guy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, John, for coming on.
Based out of San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
He had a nice setup. He had a camera. He had a companion in the back.
His companion.
So yeah, listen to this conversation and... I don't know. Subscribe. Do whatever else. Do whatever you want.
Smash that subscribe button, bro.
Subscribe button. I don't care. Just listen to this and nerd out with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Hontaru.
Nice. That was nice.
I'm really happy with that. So we are here with the CEO of Companion, a incredibly, incredibly cool piece of technology we're very excited to talk about. Ladies and gentlemen, John Hontaru.
Oh, nice job on the last name. Thank you guys for having me.
He practiced twice, guys,
before this, and he just nailed it. But thank you. I'm super glad to join. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for the compliments. We're super excited about the tech and kind of what we can do with animals, and we're really glad to talk to more and more people about it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we are. Obviously, we're in the pet space. We're a dog walking company, and we try, or Dan, the founder and CEO of Dan's Pet Care, has tried to integrate as much tech into the company as possible. You know, like GPS verified walks, you know, spot checks. We even talked about like checking into like employees with a drone.
Drone spot checks, things like that.
Follow Fido.
So this is you know, the next step. We usually don't think about tech when it comes to training. Yes, we think about apps, but we don't think about the hardware. How did that come about, thinking about merging training and hardware?
Cool. I like it. How did it come about? It came about because of the desire to communicate with animals. I'm going to come to your question, but I'm going to give you the origination story first because I think it's the best way to
time.
Do it.
Yeah, we got time.
So I had this really unique and just fun opportunity to work with these amazing people at Google Robotics. So I had this weird role at Google where I got to work with just the early research units, so like Google X, Google Research, working with like the TensorFlow team, in addition to what Google, the robotics assets Google had acquired like 6 or 7 years ago, just amazing teams all around the world. And looking at all of those sensors and compute and kind of all the bleeding edge stuff at the time, it became really obvious that all of these sensors, all of these pieces of compute were going to massively deepen and widen our ability to understand all the animals around us. And, this realization came from two facts, which is one, like all animals already primarily communicate through movement and posture. So like conscious communication, like how I gesture to you guys or the dog sitting by the door, you know, you need to go outside. But there's a ton in subconscious communication or unconscious communication. So how I hold myself, do I stand upright? Like how do I shrug over time? How do I walk? How does that change over time? It's the same thing with like your dog's tail wag, your dog's back position, its neck position, its jowl position. Like there's so much signal. So like for the engineers out there, there's so much physiological and psychological signal already out there that all of these animals are emitting, like you, me, our cats, our dogs, every animal. And then fact two is we now have all of these devices that can much more precisely, with infinite patience and with perfect memory, pick up on all of this motion posture. Like that sensor in your phone can, like this is in our phones, in our hands, this is in our cars, this is in our, like all over the built world. And so all of these things can much more precisely pick up on all of this movement and posture. And like it, the computer doesn't, like it can remember exactly how your dog walked a day ago, a minute ago, 10 years ago. It does not matter. And we've never had that ability. Like humans, like we just get used to kind of changes in how our dog moves, just kind of character. And so that's what got me really excited. It was like, oh my God, all of these animals use motion, like already emit tons of signal that we miss. Two, we now have all these devices that can perfectly pick up on this stuff and look for patterns. This is going to happen. There's no way it doesn't over the next 5, 10, 20 years, where in no scenario do we not have a far deeper understanding of all of this communication. So then the question was, okay, like how do we get there? Like how could we catalyze that future? That's super exciting. One, you start with like an animal that people care the most about, quote unquote, because it's like share of time, share of dollars, like all these different signals, right? Like we love dogs. And as Americans, 100%. We spend a ton of money on them. Okay, so that's a great place to start a business, especially if you want to scale it so you can go do other crazy things with animals, right? Two, start with something that everybody needs and that's crazy expensive and kind of unapproachable today, right? Like training is massively expensive if you live in an urban area. I mean, just generally in the US, but in San Francisco, it can be like $250 an hour. At the nonprofits, it's like $100 an hour. It's just not accessible to most people, right?
We got to up our rates.
Yeah, we should. $250, you say?
No, but it can be very, very expensive.
Absolutely.
It's something that you need not only initially when you get a dog, but also like over the dog's life. Like training is roughly 50% of Americans think it's one and done. 50% think it, you realize you need to keep doing it over time. It's like exercise. Yeah. You need to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And three, like machines have an unfair advantage, just flat out. Like they're infinitely patient. They're perfectly precise. Like where a human might get tired after like a week or two, or maybe 3 or 4 weeks of like, you know, repetitions, getting up to like a sit repetition of say like 300 to 400 times they practice it. A machine will do it 10,000 times over 9 months, right? Varying the routines, honing
and
that
not
behavior.
Get tired.
Exactly. So it's just perfect. And so the types of behaviors that we strive for, the types of responsiveness that we want to give you, or what you would call like superpowers, or like only if you'd seen like a service dog or guide dog, like that's what we strive to do over time.
Yeah.
We're not going to get there as fast, but we're going to get there over time and at an order of magnitude lower cost and an order of magnitude higher fun than anything that's possible. And so that is one. So I mentioned, I kind of started off really high level, which is we're going to sense all this communication. I then went down to like, here's the application you start with for all these reasons. But the device is capable of far more. And like training is what gets you in the door, and training is really phenomenal in a tons of different ways. There's all sorts of tertiary benefits in addition to the support of the human-animal bond, which is why, like, if you ask the leadership team of the SFSPCA, like why they let us in the doors 3 or 4 years ago to have our office there, it's because they view us as a supplement to the human-animal bond. Actually, counterintuitively, not a replacement, because we're actually enhancing it through training.
Yeah.
So there's a number of things we're really excited about. We want to start with training, and then there's tons of other things you can do. I mentioned like tertiary bonus benefits of the human-animal bond. There's also just a massive benefit to enriching dogs, keeping them engaged. And what that two-way interaction with the device has done, like you mentioned a lot of other tech, and I was going to plug this one thought, which is we have a team of, I love, my colleagues are unbelievable. I'm so lucky to be able to work with them every day. And we're super excited about this because we do believe it's really the first piece of technology that's designed not for the human, but for the dog. Yeah. Like, this is a device that has a conversation with your dog several times a day in ways that your dog wants to participate. Like, this isn't, it's not, with the right way to put it, it's not a, like, it's not a camera that's kind of not really, the dog's not really aware of. It's not a wearable that lets a human track where the dog is.
Yeah.
By the way, I think there's really cool uses for those several products, but this is designed, all of our, like, blood, sweat, and tears has gone into the machine learning, the behavioral algorithms, the animal wellness algorithms, all the things that make it, that give Companion the ability to interact with your animal, in addition to the other services we include, the Companion Coach, in addition to the Companion app. So I took your question and I went way in left field, then I went to right field, then I went to center field, and I'll bring it back home.
You just squeezed the entire podcast into one essay answer. No, but I love the fact that the machine is built for the dog.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like a quantum computing Furbo.
Yeah. I don't want to put it this way, but I wouldn't use it. Like, there's no reason for the human to use it. You set it up, you have your dog be trained by it and interact with it. So, like you talked about the other cameras, you know, you press a button, you shoot a treat. You talk to
They're simple.
No, they're simple and they're meant for the human to facilitate interaction with the dog. Yeah. This is just to facilitate the dog's interaction with the machine, which is super cool.
And so the idea is, so counterintuitively, and I want to be really careful about how I articulate this, one of the things that makes us most excited is that our product tends to increase the amount of time people spend on training because it becomes far more fun, far easier to get great results. We would never, ever want people to spend less time with their animal, and especially we would never, ever want people to spend less time on training. A lot of the benefit of our device and service is that the goal of the device is to do a lot of the heavy lifting repetition for you. It's always there. Yeah. It's always giving your dog something engaging so that we can give you 95% of the repetitions or 99%, like do all the heavy lifting for you. But you always complete the loop of you go after you actually go use those new behaviors
the
in different
human
environments.
Element.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what really sold me on it. Like, I was definitely initially like a little skeptical. I'm like, all right, there's this machine that's going to help train a dog. It's a beautiful idea in theory, but from my perspective, it's always been, human interaction, doing the training, the dog's responding to a person. At the end of the day, when you're dealing with animals and their behavior, they respond to stimulus, right? So you get them used to that stimulus and they're going to engage with it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to sit there with I might, but the average...
I would just sit in the corner just watching my dog.
We get that a lot, actually. We have a lot of people in the back of the videos. It's like watching them on their couch. It's really funny.
Oh, yeah.
We talk,
just watching
totally
what they're doing. And people, the biggest thing we run into, so we do dog training, but the biggest problem we run into is people will be like, do I have to be there for the training session? Do I have to? It's like, we're not here to train your dog. We're here to give you the tools.
Yeah.
Now, this thing, it's such an amazing addition. It's basically training on steroids because you're having a trainer that is not going to break its focus. It's not getting a text. Yeah. It doesn't have a family emergency. There's nothing happening.
Doesn't have a schedule.
It's sole job is to reinforce the behavior.
But it can run forever without commitment, without getting tired. It has more computing power than any of us combined.
And you're giving us a ton of credit. I don't know about that.
Also, the
runs
stimulation.
Runs on Windows 98.
Yeah. the Windows boot up noise. The stimulation is so good pleasing for the dogs. They love that old Windows chime.
The
chime.
Showing my age.
But that's another aspect of it, too. I think that's such a huge benefit. One of the things, we're going into hundreds of dogs' homes a day. One of the things we often run into is, Fluffy tore up the bed and they did this. And people are like, oh, my dog did this. A big part of that is they need stimulation. A lot of these breeds that people have, German Shepherds, Labs, these are working dogs. They need that stimulus. You're basically providing that intellectual stimulation for them as well as actually sharpening those skills. So like as soon as I really sat down and dove into it, I was like, all right, I'm pretty sold on this thing. I'm definitely very intrigued to see where it's going to go.
Wait, just a little website moment for the audio people, because we've been putting all the media here on the green screen. We've been showing the video people, but audio people, if you're listening on audio, go to joincompanion.com. On the banner, you can see a little like looping video just for you to get a sense of how cool this thing looks. it's like we enjoy tech in general, but we also enjoy tech design. That looks good.
Oh, thanks.
That becomes part of the home. It looks like another appliance that would fit in the home.
Yeah.
How the you have a design team, very talented design
we
team.
We have some phenomenal friends, vendors, partners, investors called Frog yeah. Design.
How did you arrive at this? At this yeah,
so,
final
a great question. Okay, so lots in there. Let me see if I can hit on all of it. So before I lose the thought, then I'll go into design.
Go ahead.
That yeah. one thing we don't talk about is that we're training two animals, and there's no way around it. Like in the sense, and we don't. It's all opt in for everyone, but yeah. we not only want to make training easier and fun for your dog. In fact, we have to win its affection because it's all opt in. The dog can always walk away from the device. Like that's yeah. one big yeah. thing is we always tell folks like make sure your dog has a path out of the room. Make sure like never ever close your dog in
lock
the room.
Them in force there. Them. Yeah, lock like, them in the bathroom.
You can imagine like for the best of meaning people like sometimes they would like to. A dog is more likely to be successful if it perceives that it has a path to safety, if it ever wants it, or yeah, a path yeah. to fresh air, right? So we have to earn the trust of your dog. We have to earn the trust mm-hmm. of you. And so what we ultimately want to give you is a really, really, really primed, well-engaged dog that is ready to close the loop on all these different behaviors, which are the most important behaviors for your day-to-day interactions. And then we'll yeah. keep them there over time because we keep practicing and adding more and more behaviors over time. So you have that superhuman bond today. We'll help foster it, and you'll have that in the future because we're going to be there with you the entire step of the way. There's also the human side, which is so we have of the companion service. There's this device. There's the app. There's the human coach, and these people are phenomenal. I Camden, she'll probably get annoyed with me over time for doing this, but one of our coaches, Camden, literally trained a diabetic alert dog in her dorm room at Princeton. It's those kind of people who are just like, yeah. they love the science. It's like the PhDs. It's the folks with multiple certifications. It's the folks who have written books. Like it's that level of trainer who have trained service dogs, like diabetic alert dogs. It's that level of trainer who are specifically really, really interested in the type of things we're doing. Like this idea that you can create so much behavioral knowledge and infuse it into a vice so that it scales across every single dog in the network, every single session. You can apply all of this knowledge and technology to, right? As opposed to trying to do it one off at a time. And then they appear also superhuman, not only because they have this amazing background, but because they see all of the data coming off the device. You can always yeah. imagine like the devices are independent agents out there in the field, always doing sessions with the dog. And right now we program the yeah. sessions to start a certain time, or you can start with the app. We can also program it over time so that your dog can trigger them itself, which would be super cool, right? Like think of it, not a hot.
Hey, I want to be trained today.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be a
they
hot.
They come over, they put their paw print
yes.
on.
Well, I mean, honestly, like it doesn't, think about it like this. Like right now we have hot words for the, you know, okay, big company name. I can't say it because there's tons of devices in here.
Yeah.
But imagine.
Okay, Schmoogle.
Exactly. Imagine a hot posture. So like the dog yeah. either yeah. walks in front of the device or the dog sits down in front of the
Ooh.
Device and they can start a session whenever they want.
Makes eye contact with the device.
Yeah, I like that exactly. a lot actually.
So the idea being like you can almost think of us as like the world's most complicated food puzzle. So like that's at our most humblest, that's probably what we are. And that's why like, I mean, Mars, so Frog invested in us, one of these really interesting design firms, in addition to like Mars, one of the big pet companies. And we love mm-hmm. chatting with the Pruner guys too, because there's no reason why right now we serve kind of like 20 to 30% of a dog's daily calories through treats. That's like kind of like what's recommended. And we use what we think are really healthy treats in comparison to the rest of training treats. There's no reason why you can't feed 100% of your dog's daily calories through the device. So it has the benefit of like slow eating. It has the benefit of engagement. It has the benefit of much more training. It has the benefit of potentially relaxing a lot of tension in the family, especially we notice there's a variety of tension around like, did you feed the dog? Did you feed it on time? Who did you clean up the yeah. dog bowl? So there's all these tertiary benefits potentially to like letting this be a really fun, joyful exercise for your dog, like all throughout the day, right? And your dog can start sessions. It could be allowed to start a session when it's time to eat, or you could do like multiple small meals throughout the day. Like there's so much very easy functionality to write there. Like the hard part of this is the computer vision and animal behavior and all that stuff. Like these kind yeah. of features are super easy to write in software. And these devices we update just like a Tesla car. So it, all of them are updated over the air. Actually, all the devices now even have Wi-Fi and a cellular radio. So like it's a premium product. We want to make sure Wi-Fi is never an issue for you. So that's one thing we ensure. to your question on design, thank you. I told you I'd loop back.
No, please.
So I actually forgot like you even asked about
I'm
it.
I'm nerding out here like Tesla neural network for trainers.
Yeah.
And just like,
yeah. So that's what it, I mean, that's kind of what, it's just, it's a neural net that can is really, really good at recognizing the things that are important for dog anxiety and posture. But so, and then on the design side, we went through this really interesting phase over COVID. It's been a dark time for everybody, right? And like it's weird to say, it was an exciting time for us because there was so much like darkness going on, but you have to look for silver linings, right? You have to look for like, what are the good things that came out of this, which is we were actually launching our fleet of professional products, like the Companion Pros, out to day boarding facilities, like that, right around when COVID started. So if you think about it, like our products for our Companion Pro product was specifically designed for shelters, for day boarding, like, and that all changed in COVID, right? Like all of those places, just everything went upside down. Now, we knew we were going to go in home. It was just a matter of when. Like, it made a ton of sense to start with businesses because you could work with 20 dogs a day and, like, just change the unit economics of training, like, for service dogs, for military dogs.
You get so much data that way.
Exactly. And we're literally, like, we have 3,000 square feet on, thanks to the SFSPCA, on their roof, where we literally above, it's a city block in San Francisco, if you can imagine, like, the wealth of data that you have access to inside the building.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And they're just a phenomenal partner for so many other reasons. We're so humbled by them. What was I talking about? We were talking about data. We were talking about
design.
So anyway, we knew we were going to go in home. We had this business product. We're like, now's the time to go, guys. Like everybody's like all of these high end pet parents who are our first adopter customers are now stuck in home with a dog that's becoming more and more anxious, needs engagement, and they no longer have access to any of the services they used to use before, whether it's a dog walker, trainer, like nobody can interact in their home anymore. Like, it's during COVID, right? So, and we also have a small body of evidence, and I'll talk about this Clubhouse thing we just did, and we hinted at it more, but we had published a year and a half ago a case study with leaders at the SFSPCA as co-authors showing this unbelievable or very strong result with separation anxiety. Very low end. This was just a case study, but it was to capture what we'd started to see anecdotally, which was of the 15 to 30 million dogs that have separation anxiety in the US, especially of the ones that have like hyper attachment, have a really, really acute case of it. Our device seems to have this really interesting effect where it keeps those dogs engaged and enriched as the owner is able to leave the house. And we've, with all of the cases we've seen, we've had 100% success. It's relatively fast and it seems to be permanent. But we don't. Wow. But we do not have near enough evidence to offer that as a product yet. One of the things we're doing right now is actually getting a higher and higher body of evidence to support that. We never want to make public claims because it's a really acute condition that can be really harmful to the human and the dog. So we don't. But it's the prospect of being able to help with that sort of condition is really exciting to us. So anyway, that's, let's see, we were talking about like where we went business and realized like, okay, all these things are happening that we can help with in home. Let's go in home. So we cobbled together the service, kind of the consumer service from our business device and just text messaging and kind of like faking the app basically last summer.
Yeah.
And we gave some units to like Mars, the world's biggest pet company we chatted with like Frog Design. We chatted with like what used to be Crunch Fund, kind of now Tuesday Capital. And they loved it and they wanted to invest, which meant the world to us. In addition to like some of the world's largest presences in animal welfare, like Michelson Found Animal Charity. That meant the world to us, right? To have these phenomenal brands like the SFSPCA and Michelson Found Animals and others be partners in some meaningful way meant a lot to us. And anyway, so we started with the business device. We went to the consumer device. And then brought on partners like Frog, and they are the ones, so all the way back to the question, they are the ones who had this amazing design team based out of Milan, the UK, and San Francisco, that helped not only with, actually there are different teams that work with us on branding, where we really love the brand mark. We think it's like these great, natural, like comfortable, but premium finishes. And then they also worked on the app design that we're super proud of, in addition to the industrial design of the units themselves.
Also, shout out to whoever designed the logo.
Yeah, we like the logo a lot.
That's one of the first things we noticed. Like, oh my God, it's
simple and
it communicates such a happy and, you know, laid back moment with that dog, yeah. You know, in the logo. It's so nice.
And it's looking up, like looking to the future.
Yeah, it's alert. It's like, you know, it's there. It's so cool.
So I have a variety of colleagues. Almost all of my colleagues have far more taste than I do. So I was along for the ride as we went through the journey with Frog. I thought the Frog team did a great design. We're happy to talk about their work with us. We also just had a lot of great colleagues, like my colleague Shannon, who's their COO and president, who did a great job in working with them as well. I think you asked about how we made that connection. Like originally, it's a small hardware world in Silicon Valley. Like it's rare to do. It's far more rare than software for a variety of different reasons we can talk about. And Shannon is this phenomenal person on a variety of different levels, but she's also like a mentor. She's on the board of Stanford StartX, and she's done a variety of kind of like first of kind consumer products, like everything from Anova, the sous vide company, to Jimmy Jane and others. And she knew the guy that runs Frog Venture and some of the guys kind of running the studio. And we hit it off right away in terms of their interest in the product and the kind of how the teams meshed.
Yeah, because I'm looking at one of the I think earlier iterations of it. It really went from looking like
Soviet era space heater.
I was going to say like a home appliance to something that, you know, it's clean and it looks like it fits in your home. Like one of the things that we love about, because we do stuff with Furbo a lot, mm-hmm. we just like the clean aesthetic of it. It's nice, it's simple, and it just looks like it fits.
So it
like,
becomes part of the home.
They definitely did a very nice job transitioning from what you guys had prior to this. I did have a quick question though about, so you had made a comment about you could theoretically feed your dog through this the entire day, right? So as pet owners, part of that relationship that is established comes from you're the person who feeds me, right?
Yep.
That's one of the parts of bonding. What do you think the impacts of that relationship between owner and dog will be? Because it shifts from, you know, mom or dad or whoever is feeding me to that box over there is feeding me dinner.
That totally. Magic box there.
Don't you dare touch that box, mom or dad. That's where the food comes from. You get away from it.
Yeah, I love that question because like the end of the day, our product's not a device that feeds your dog. Our product is a really phenomenal relationship with a being you care deeply about. And we would never, like, everything we do is in mission towards improving that. So, like, I can imagine us either as, like, the coach kind of working with the human or at being available in the app or kind of the context around how to use this for 100% feeding is you don't use it for like 90% feeding or 80% feeding.
Yeah.
Where we always got you. Like we always like, yeah, we can do like, we'll do a couple of mini meals for you throughout the day, but then, you know, why don't you give your dog that cool treat tonight? That's also good for it. Like, you can make it kind of like a little ritual at the end of the walk or something. Right. So it's, and it can be your choice. We can provide you guidance on the best way to do it. But right now people just, they don't have access to good information. Like it's so scattered out there. Like part of our value on part of the value we found with our users is that a lot of people, especially the, our early adopters who are like typically a little bit, more likely to be type A or more likely to be like kind of like on it, like proactive. But they love the idea that this coach, this really high powered professional is not just giving them guidance and then sending them off, but giving them guidance and then telling them like every week or two, like what are the things they could be working on? What are the exact right things to be doing with your dog? Whether you're raising a kid, a dog, you always feel like, okay, I know what the guidance is, but I'm not sure how it applies in this situation. Am I doing the right thing right now? But this coach who's following you, who's the same team that you're being supported by, it just like a whole different level of almost like positive control or positive knowledge, affirmative knowledge that you're doing the right thing. And so I think that's a benefit we don't talk about that much. It's almost like it just blends into the whole companion experience, but it's a different way of raising a dog. It's a different way of living with a dog. If you know you always have a thought partner who has this amazing resume kind of lockstep, and that thought partner can rely on what you're telling the person about your dog, but that thought partner also has direct evidence from like how the dog is engaging, is it eating with the same speed? Is it moving the same way? Is it more biased in its interactions with the device? But so it's one of the things, if we just did a service where you got to work with like a really, really high end, like, you know, service dog level coach, I think it'd be really fun and really cool. But it's the combination of the two things that really make it powerful, which is like having the direct data. And then having access to someone where you feel like you're in really good hands and kind of positive affirmation or positive control.
Yeah, you're getting essentially a live-in trainer who has photographic memory.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That and is really, really good at calculating stuff.
Yeah, way better than us.
So we talked about the data, the analysis of data, and the application.
Yep.
How, like, I know this is going to be a loaded question and it's probably going to be hard to answer, but what kinds of data does Companion collect from the dog? You said posture, you said, a speed of command and it's repetition.
Called, like edge computing or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of data goes into making Companion what it is?
Cool. So there's a couple of key things I'll lay out as to why this is possible now. And then I'll talk a little bit about how we capture data and what we capture. And then the first thing I'll hit right off the bat is it's all opt-in. In terms of like all of our customers, like we always, the only reason we would keep data is if we would give you a choice and say like why it's really good for your dog if you let us access this data. Right. So the only reason, think of this almost as for background, think of this almost as like the same types of sensors you have in the Face ID on your iPhone or something similar, right?
The LiDAR?
Yeah. Or like you're similar. Yeah. So like it's, regardless of the actual spectrum, the electromagnetic spectrum you use, we're bouncing, it's like radar for your dog. We're using specifically what's called a depth sensor. So like that's included in that Intel RealSense camera you can see in our units, but also RGB. So just like a red, green, blue, like just like a normal video camera, right? And that's what we're collecting. And then what we're doing, which is why this is all now possible, is we're able to take that information and process it in real time, as opposed to sending that to the cloud, like a lot of other smart video cameras or smart doorbell cameras or others do, because they don't have the compute power on board to run those calculations really quickly, kind of the AI calculations, quote unquote.
On board Companion, just to clarify for,
Exactly. Yeah. So we have, we have a Google TensorFlow processing unit on board the Companion, and its only job is to run, most of its only job is to run very, very high speed computer vision to take a look at the inputs from the different sensors we have on the device and tell the rest of the computer what's happening with the dog. So not just take what's in it, it's an image, but actually, is there a dog in the image? And if so, what is that dog doing? And then then in order to interact, so think of this almost like, everyone's had a cell phone conversation where there's like half a second or a second lag and it's just like impossible to have a conversation. Yeah. Same thing with training. It's even worse with training.
You need that instant feedback.
Yes. Yeah. And so there's an exponential curve between latency, so the presentation of the desirable behavior and the reward, at least the marker of the reward and the bridging stimulus. So the shorter that latency is, the lower that latency is, the faster the animal will learn that. And there's a limit. So like over like half a second or so, you can't train. Like I don't say it's impossible, but it's just very, very challenging. And worse, if you're even slower than that, you can actually cause anxiety in kind of a counterintuitive way, which is the dog could do something like could sit and then like turn its head because it's getting bored, or do something else, or like start walking around the room, right? And if you reinforce that, the dog's gonna be really confused about why you reinforce it. It actually thought you reinforced it because it turned its head or it started walking around the room.
Yeah.
The reward time is so important when it comes to training.
Exactly. So it's like the same thing as like, what's like when you sacrifice the person in the volcano to try to get good crops? And it happens randomly, and like you're like superstitious behavior. There you go. So it's like a superstitious behavior, right? Sorry, I clearly a little slow today. I'm trying to connect some words.
It's that latency that we talked about.
Exactly, right. My brain's a little high latency right now. But you have to do it very fast, and we set a very high bar for ourselves. So we're operating like tens of frames per second. So that
it's actually really cool to watch. I was watching the video you had from 2019. I'm sure things have obviously improved since then, but being able to visually see what the computer is actually looking at is really cool. Watching it, just the percentage of the movement and all this stuff, and like seeing that's a ton of processing that has to happen. And obviously having it all on board allows us to be an effective unit.
Exactly. So
because it relies on that efficiency also.
Exactly. So like, it has to be accurate. It has to run really fast. And so it's becoming more and more possible to do that. Like there's more and more tools to enable that kind of stuff, but it's still a relatively high-end skill set. So it took us a while to really because you have to think about, okay, what do I want to teach the machine to learn? Like what postures, what transitional poses, like what signs of anxiety, what signs of compliance, what signs of stress do I want to teach this computer? Like what are the things that are really important that human trainers kind of do naturally, but you have to teach a computer to do it. Then you have to sort, you have to get kind of that taxonomy of all the different information and figure out, okay, how do I program a computer to find these things in all different environments with the most diverse visually species of animal on the planet, dogs, and all different shape sizes, hair reflectivities, et cetera. And then I have to, then once I have all that, then I have to figure out how to, okay, once I actually can recognize these poses, like how do I actually get the dog to learn without like any sort of, we don't lure the dogs. We don't, you know, we don't do anything physical with the dogs. We're just capturing the different behaviors and shaping them over time. So the first time we see a sit, the first time we see a dog looking at the device, that's actually watch if you capture it, right? It's the dog's looking right at the camera, or I should look right at my camera. Or the first time the dog goes down because it's hanging out in front of the device, or the dog sits, or the dog comes towards the device, that's recall. So you can actually, all these behaviors happen very naturally, very quickly, and you can start with them and then shape them actually over time too, if you want to change them, but shape approximations. And the only way you can do that is if you move really fast, because you have to catch them in the moment. Right. And so it's this really fun, it's this really fun interaction with, now we have tools, like there's stuff from NVIDIA, there's stuff from Google that can do this stuff this fast on board at a cost in which you can scale it to consumers.
And it'll only get better from now on, too.
Exactly.
Like, you know, imagine in 10 years, the kind of computing power that you will have.
Yeah.
You'll be able to, like, do, like, full physicals, like, just running.
Oh, totally. Yeah. So, and you can think about it, like, we're already, I mean, I think some of the fun, like, you know, some of the fireside, like, conversations we've had are, like, imagine if we put in an IR sensor. We actually already kind of have some emitters on board with a RealSense camera, but imagine you're able to pick up subtle temperature variations at relatively high resolution. Mm-hmm. Maybe you are able to look at the dog's ear and see the little pulse of the heartbeat, because you can see the little pulse of different temperature, right?
So this could be a health device.
Maybe you can see like higher resolution of all the facial structure on the dog, or like the moisture content of the dog's nose. And you can see that change because you can see different reflectivity of that moisture surface. There's so many little things.
It's the future. We're living in the future. The fact that we can think about this and be rational about it.
I'm also thinking you guys need to talk to Pet Pulse if you haven't yet.
Oh, yeah. Have you heard of Pet Pulse?
Have you heard of these
guys?
I
don't think so.
So they have a product right now that it basically, the goal is to interpret the emotional state of a dog based on its bark, right? So they've documented, I think it's what, a million?
10 million.
10 million barks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all right. My dog's angry. It's upset. There's tons and tons of applications for it. One of the things being, like you were talking about before, them being able to detect someone's blood sugar dropping. If there's some sort of, you know, if someone's an epileptic or a diabetic, you can predict that, notify medical personnel, whoever you need. There's so many different ways. I'm just so excited that all of this cool tech is just coming out now. Like this is
when he came. So Dan like found you guys, and when he came to me with the idea, I looked at it. I'm like,
is that real?
Yeah, huh. We get that a lot.
No, yeah, because then I watched the video. I did research. I'm like, this is the stuff like you saw like 20 years ago, it like on Minority Report or some other futuristic movie that now is possible because of the computing power, because of, you know, the great team that you were able to put together. It's just, to me, is the next 10 years, it's just, you know, you can't even predict.
Well, that's what I want to
be able to do.
Is
so that's my next question.
Yeah.
Where are we going
with this?
Cool.
Mr. Future.
Cool. There's so much to talk about there. Let me think about the right way to structure this. We're a huge proponent of this type of platform for lots of reasons. Like, I think that we actually have our board member. One of our board members is the CEO founder of Whistle, and love the wearable segments as well. A guy named Ben Jacobs. There's a ton you can learn off of the wearable devices. I think that's great. But it's limited in the sense that we have an order of magnitude more data because we see the entire dog, the ears, the tail, the eyes, like all that stuff, right? As opposed to just one point on the neck. And you can see it's a lot easier to get consumers to use a device with just vision because you don't have to charge or mount or a lot of reasons why. Exactly. And so we can see a ton. And what I can say on the short answer is there's an infinite number of health things that we think will make this platform something that you wouldn't imagine not having for your animal in the next 5 or 10 years. Like, it would be like, why wouldn't you have a companion if you leave your dog at home? Like, it'd be crazy not to. Not only because, like, everyone's more aware of the engagement benefits, the, like, for, I mean, for young dogs, for older dogs, but we've also started to see very tangible health and wellness benefits a lot earlier on than we thought we ever would. And so I'll give you a couple of examples that are the more intuitive ones, and then I'll go to some of the weirder ones. We've already started detecting pain in real time. So we can tell, we've already been able to tell customers their dog was in pain and they didn't know it. If you think about it, like, it's actually we should have seen this coming, but if you're asking an animal to do all these sort of motions and postures every day, and you have a machine that's really good at looking for patterns, you can tell the instant the dog was willing to do sit down and it's no longer willing to do down, that there's something going, and it flags to one of our coaches. Our coaches look at the video and be like, oh yeah, there's something going on with that dog's front shoulders. And then they can text that owner or message them through the app and say, like, your dog, by the way, we're pretty sure there's something going on. Like we're fairly confident it might be this. Like, why don't you give your dog a doggy Tylenol equivalent? And then we've been able to watch that dog start going down again. Or we can put together that video for you and arm you with it to go to your vet. Like, that's a very easy kind of to understand one. There's that. And, like, we actually just did a big Clubhouse event with the founder and CEO of Fear Free Pets, Marty Becker, and as well as Ken Ramirez, the chief training officer of Karen Pryor. And we talked a little bit about this. Like, one of the things that got Marty super interested is the really low hanging fruit on the health and wellness side, which is stuff like, one of our team members was just talking about this the other day. Like, our software leader was mentioning that one of his dogs was super fearful around thunder. It's like super common, right? He had bought one of those CDs or just the sound files. Like, I think it was a while ago. And they had it on to get the dog used to that noise. But it's like, it wasn't really done fast, you know, just kind of having the noise on. Imagine being able to do that with a companion device where, like, you can actually we have a high fidelity speaker. You can slowly raise the volume of the thunder, and then you can positively reinforce counter condition and watch the animal and see how it's doing the entire time for thunder, for baby noises, for the sound of motorcycle brakes, the sound of truck brakes, like the urban.
Also, without you even being home.
Yeah. The baby noise I like too. Cause like, you know, if you got someone who's bringing a new baby home, you just get it used to the noises so that it doesn't, you know, sometimes that, anytime there's a change in the dynamic of a household, a kid goes away to college, there's a new baby, somebody moves in, somebody moves out.
Construction.
It changes how they behave. And so being able to prepare them, I think, could, you know, this has a huge impact on the mental health of your dog, you know, reducing that stress and making it so that they feel safe. Because that's the number one thing before anything else is an animal needs to feel safe for it to be able to do all the other things.
And so, like, that's Marty's mission. And, like, we were thrilled. So both Marty and Ken joined the companion team over the last number of months. They're on our advisory board. And it means, like, his mission, like, in the fear-free mission, means the world to us. And so, like, there's so many very simple things we can do. So, like, not only do we want to help with dogs that have noise anxieties over the next 5 or 10 years, but we want to be there at the young age so your dog never has them to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, we want it to start a generation where in the future, this just doesn't happen. Maybe it does with traumatic events, but we can be there to help course correct you over time.
Yeah. Solve the problem before it happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the very advanced stuff. We talked a little bit about kind of seeing different postures, like, but I talked about the kind of obvious example of the dog not doing down, but still going to sit. There's also like the less obvious, which is like, does your dog bias towards its right leg when it sits down? Does your dog bias like towards like when your dog, and the more futuristic stuff, which you can kind of, if you think about it for a while, like I've been thinking about this for years, you can get to over time, is imagine one of the hot postures we could do with the device is you can have the dog walk in a perfectly straight line in front of the device and train the dog to do that because you have a launcher that can go left or right. And then what that means is every single day, maybe multiple times a day, you can run a gait analysis study on your dog. So to see like how its hips are moving, how its back positions, how its neck
is. I was about this.
You literally have that calibration step, that data record every day of the dog's life. There is no way that you don't have an advantage to picking up on a wide variety of conditions of that animal way ahead of anyone else. And so
you could like visually diagnose a cruciate ligament tear like that.
Yeah. Hip dysplasia.
Yes.
There are so many different things that, you know, you send that data to, because most vets,
Wow.
You could diagnose like a cruciate tear over the phone.
Yeah.
Most vets, though, if you send them a video and you tell them what happened, or they get to see what actually happened, boom, right there. All right, the dog might need surgery. They might need this. Like, there's so many different things that can be done with this medically.
Any plans to integrate this directly with some of the higher tech vets?
Oh, like the so what funny thing is Ben Jacobs, the founder CEO of Whistle, is also one of the founders of Modern Animal. So I actually don't know if they classify themselves as high tech. I think they do, but they're the, kind of the, for those who don't know, it's the one medical version of the vet clinic is kind of their take on
it.
We would love to work with more vet partners, more pharma partners. We're actually working with some of the leaders in animal pharma, which we haven't announced publicly, but to do that, if you think about it, it's there's so many interests that are well aligned. Pharma companies want to sell more money to sell more drugs. Osteoarthritis is a good example of one of those drugs that is only prescribed when you can detect it. But there's so many animals in pain out there today where the owner just doesn't know, but they'd want to. And then separately, like we can connect them or use their tools and resources to help and bring them into the companion conversation to then help consumers like learn more about their dog, learn when their dog's in pain. Like help diagnose if we start to see the early signs of osteoarthritis, which you would never be able to pick up on just because we're not really adapted for that.
Yeah,
that's the big thing.
That's
the
main thing.
For an animal to show that it's in pain, that's being vulnerable. And instinctually, they're not going to want to show vulnerability. So like I worked as a vet tech for years. I literally have seen it where a dog came in and part of its intestines were hanging out and the dog was wagging his tail.
Yeah.
Like he was like acting like he was totally fine. So they need to be in a fair amount of pain. Most dogs, there are some that if you go to touch them, they cry. They're a bit traumatic, but being able to diagnose those minute changes and see that and get ahead of it with the arthritis. All right, let's start putting the dog on some glucosamine chondroitin. Let's put them on, you know, let's give them an Apoquil injection. There's so many different things you could start doing to prolong that quality of life.
Totally.
And I think that's huge. That's, I mean, what pet parent wouldn't want that?
It starts with that sort of observation that, you know, only a computer can. You know, those micro movements sometimes like are
you can't get a person to sit there that long.
Yeah, because like you said, you have a dog who you know completed the sit command 5,000 times, and then one time he does it differently. Or differently from the other, you know, 3,000 times.
Or catching the trend,
You catch that pattern and, you know, having that sort of red flag to, you know, say, hey, I think there might be something wrong with Fluffy's knee because, you know, he usually favors the left. Now he went to the right. And, you know, those sort of things that a trainer, even the best trainer, could not pick up.
Yeah. And they just don't have the opportunity because, like, nobody can afford to work with most people in the world cannot afford to work with a really great trainer through the life of the dog.
Right.
It's just something
have thousands of sessions.
We would love to. We would love to have a trainer for every step of the way that just hasn't been possible for most people. I totally agree. Like, it's not just sudden variations, it's the long term variations which are particularly interesting for us because, like I said, machines have perfect memory. So the idea that I'd say, like, anecdotally, a third or a quarter of the houses we go into to do interviews or to do like some of our early testing, like we started doing kind of paid testing around the Bay Area like a couple years ago. And a third of the homes we go into, there's something going on with the dog. The owner has no idea. And we have to be really gentle in bringing it up. But like, yeah, my dog just skips now. It's just kind of part, like as my dog got older, it started skipping when we go out and walks. It's like, actually, there's something going on with your dog. Like we have to be very gentle with it. But most of the time the dog has some condition, which is, it's not beneficial by any means, and like it likely could be painful, but the owners, we just can't see it because we can't look at patterns over 6 months. We just don't. It's not natural for us as humans.
So I'm going to pivot for a second. So I'm curious, you know, you get a puppy, you bring them home, you get them used to this machine, and chances are they're all going to do fantastic with it. Now, a lot of people out there, like I'm a huge supporter of rescuing pets, you know, get them from a shelter, wherever you can get them from. Have you guys had experience with abused rescue animals? How do they respond to this, to the companion system?
Cool. It's a really good question. I'd say like, I don't think, we've worked with a number of animals, many of which So we did a lot of our early acclimation studies and kind of engagement, which also was kind of a side benefit for some of the animals at the SFSPCA. Our hypothesis in the future is that this could actually be one of the really great tools for a lot of us are volunteers at the SFSPCA. It's kind of a fun way at the end of a work day or during a work day to take a break and go down and walk some dogs. But and one of the classifications of volunteers, can you work with target or reactive dogs? There's a lot of different nomenclature around it, but the dogs that have behavioral things they need to work through or you need to help them work through before they can adopt out. And one of our hypotheses, especially as the shelter population has dramatically changed in the last year and a half. Hypothesis used to be like, let's put machines all over the shelter and let every single animal benefit from it, which we still might do. Mm-hmm. But right now it actually feels like the really pressing need is actually, like, what if we could give a companion unit and the service at either a nonprofit rate or for free or heavily subsidized to every person who wants to adopt or is willing to take on working with a target or reactive dog. To make it that much easier and then give that target a reactive dog that much more likelihood to be adopted out. So
that's the big thing is being able to help alleviate those stressors or whatever it is that those dogs get so tense about.
Cause mostly it's, but from humans, that's the thing, you know, we have clients that can only be walked by
a specific person, man, woman.
You know, it's like just a back and forth between some rescue dogs are scared of tall men. You know, and just hats. Men in general, men with hats, having this, even like, I don't know if the scale is way too big, but having one in every, you know, cage in the kennel would be so rewarding for them because how many hours a day are they without any sort of stimuli?
Yeah, just having that additional stimulation.
Yeah, and that would, in the long run, make them more adoptable.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in quotes because some people, you know, don't have the patience to adopt a dog that's been rescued.
Adoptable.
I know, they're all adoptable. Every single dog's adoptable.
Totally.
But, you know, some families get driven away from a reactive dog.
Yeah, absolutely.
And companion could definitely, you know, put a dent in that and make them a lot more approachable.
Sure. Totally. So, yeah, I think totally agree. We have equipment actually mounted on kennels, like at the SFSPCA. Like, we did a lot of early data collection. We've done a lot of testing with... Think of like in kennel run technology, and like we think it's going to work really well, like kind of at scale. It's a matter of when we want to get to it ASAP, and it's a matter of like where the need is. And right now, the need isn't really there because of the dynamics have just shifted so much in this COVID environment. The need's really at home.
Yeah.
But you can think like there's so much low hanging fruit. Like the box can literally hang outside of the kennel as long as it has line of sight.
Yeah.
In.
Right.
And then like there's low hanging fruit thing, like just the simplest things in the world. Like every time the door opens, launch a treat. It's because like a lot of animals get scared when they hear that door coming open, right? But like, and just the door when this is the door to the kennel run, let alone the individual kennels. But the just doing simple things like that, let alone doing in kennel training or in kennel run training, is super fun. So we're really excited. And like, there are institutions like the SFSPCA has 1,500 volunteers, and like they've done such a great job in funding. Like, they're probably not the most neediest shelter in the world because they've done a great job of making sure they have a great investor base or donor base. But there's a number of shelters that just don't have the coverage to have volunteers attend to every dog that they don't have near the coverage to train every dog, which all the research has shown greatly increases the chance of adoption and adoption retention. So that was part of the reason I got really excited about training in particular was, do one thing extremely well with the benefit of infinite time, because most people have to leave their animals at home. So like make good use of that time. But also there's this really cool tailwind, which is if you can do that across shelters, you will help get dogs adopted. And like that just from a marketing standpoint, you could do like a Tom Shoe model where like buy a device, we'll get one in a shelter for you. And like we even show you pictures coming from that device because we have a camera in it. We'll show you the dogs you're helping. It's like that kind of stuff.
That's beautiful. I love, you know, any organization that could tie in some sort of aspect of social responsibility, I think is always a fantastic thing. And like
with great application too.
Yeah. You know? Like this is, you know, it's not like, okay, everyone's going to get a thing or they're going to get a this.
Like
this
everyone gets a car.
I mean, that'd be great too. Well, cause we're getting ready to open our first brick and mortar facility.
Congratulations.
Later this year. Thank you very much. We are very excited, but literally as soon as I watched that video, I was like, we could use this.
We'll put a wholesale order for.
I'll send you an email.
Cool. Invoices are great.
This
we love
is something that like it would be fantastic for.
100%.
So speaking of getting it, Is it available currently? What's the price point?
Cool. So yeah, we've purposely been a little shy about all that. So right now we are shipping units out of our facility in the South Bay area. We're about to ship the next wave on the 19th. We have opened up the invite list. So if you want to join, if you are interested in potentially getting a unit soon, would encourage everyone listening to sign up at joincompanion.com. If you please, please excuse us. We're being very, we're being very thoughtful and very methodical about how we roll it out, because we love the experience that people are having, but we want to make sure that that experience stays the same regardless of how many we ship at one time. So we're going to we have an order of magnitude more signups than we have units to give in the next 6 to 9
yeah.
months. So like and that's why we're not showing pricing. It's not like you're making a purchase. I think that expectations are key, and the last thing we want to do is step on someone's expectations. So we love early adopters, young dogs, old dogs, doesn't matter. We work with all dogs. And that, you know, if you sign up, we're going to be messaging to you and we'll get you a unit as soon as we can. But it's going to happen very methodically, because what we're solving for is making sure the dogs and you absolutely love it as we go to higher and higher scale.
That's always nice to hear, because a lot of companies, especially with hardware, as soon as something is functional, they rush to market, they mass produce it.
Yeah, like a successful Kickstarter, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, the QA is shit, and they're not staying on top of it.
Servers can't handle it.
There's no good customer service. There's no good support. Like,
right.
You guys sound like you're doing all the right things the right way.
We're trying to
make sure that this is the best. Well,
you're taking the time. You're not releasing an unfinished product.
Yes.
This is what you know. You want to release it when it's ready to be released. You don't want people buying a product and basically acting as a beta tester of a mass produced product
and being unaware of it.
You know, and not knowing, you know, an unfinished product, not knowing that they bought an unfinished product, which is very cool.
Yeah. So, totally agree. And I think, like, I would even say it, we're very excited about the product. It's that I think there's one thing people ship too fast, because they either face competitive pressure or they face funding challenges or whatever that might be. And like, we've been open about the round we raised, or kind of, we announced it earlier this year. And then
congratulations on
you.
That.
Yeah. It's great to raise this year round, but the thing that we're most proud of is like who it came from. So like leading animal charities, like leading pet companies, just like the number of brands from across the world that represent what we think are really good, thoughtful partners in animal welfare, just is super humbling to us. In addition, like fun folks like Jimmy Kimmel's kind of associated firm wheelhouse VC, like some fun consumer folks.
Oh, nice.
So I think and what I'd say is that we don't face those pressures, or we don't face, I shouldn't say, like, there's a lot of reasons why good people might try to rush something. Like, we don't feel those kind of pressures like a lot of other companies have. We're lucky. And then it's not, and I think our largest, I think the thing we really want to nail is scaling up the experience. So it's, I think we're going to make sure we do that well, because I think we are huge believers in like the Peloton or Tesla model, which is going start high end, develop a reputation as like a really thoughtful brand that does the right things. It's a really premium product. You're going to love it. And then like, hopefully generate trust, and hopefully convince people that you mean the right thing. And if you are lucky, and if you earn it, they will say good things about your product to other people. I think that's probably the best thing you can do as an early consumer brand, as an early consumer company, is that show you are really dedicated to doing the right thing by everyone. And hopefully that will carry you through kind of the first 10,000, 100,000 folks.
Well, it sounds like you guys are doing all the right things. And I mean, you guys are first to market on this, right? There's, as far as I can tell, there's no one else doing anything like this out there.
There's not. We haven't seen anything similar. And these things take like a couple years to build. Like, just to stand up the systems, like it's hard.
Yeah, I'm sure this isn't a weekend
product. No, like 35 minutes ago, you said something about, we're really excited about the features, about automatic feeding. You know, it's relatively easy to code. And I'm looking like, yes, it's very easy to code. Well, 100%,
after you've had to stand up a CV system to like, you know, recognize animals at very high speed on an edge device and interconnect all the other services, everything else looks easier.
Right, exactly. In comparison.
Feeding, all right, we can handle shooting a single treat out.
Exactly, we can do that.
So in terms of like the behavior analysis, obviously we know the computer is doing that. Are there going to be more advanced training programs? Mm-hmm. Like, are you guys planning on working with some of the, you know, more influential trainers and all that stuff? Like, what's the plan with, like, developing more training programs with the dogs?
Yeah, totally. So we have already, yes. So what's the right way to put this? We get to work with some of the folks we're most excited about across the world and kind of new training and new behaviors, whether it's like folks like Ken Ramirez is the chief training officer of Karen Pryor, whether it's Paul Mundell, the former CEO of Canine Companions for Independence, like the largest service dog school in the country, or it's folks like Evan McLean or Sasha Protopova or Erica Furbacher. These are all leaders in their field, and they're all formerly investors and advisors of Companion. In addition, we have this phenomenal team of folks run by some just stunning colleagues. And they are, we lean on all these like very senior advisors to, in addition to our own internal skill sets, to develop new behaviors over time. And we are, think of this, what's the easiest way to think of it? Like, there's tens of things, if not hundreds of things, the device can train. I'll try to do this clearly as I can. And there's a saw going on in the background, so I'm going to try to get, listen to the sound of my voice. So there's things like barking is like a really challenging thing. What if you could teach no bark? What if you could teach potty on command? What if you could teach chew this but don't chew that? There's lots of potential roadmap features that we'll be giving out to folks kind of like 1, 2, 3 at a time each quarter as we start scaling. And like they'll come onto your vice just like a new piece of driving software comes onto your Tesla vehicle.
Wow.
And like your coach will walk you through it. Like, by the way, like your dog's doing great on most of the basic obedience behaviors. We'll be wrapping those up and like really starting to practice and hone those. By the way, we're also going to do like, there's a couple different behaviors we can start this quarter. Like we could, just like Paul Mundell had to teach service dogs to use the bathroom on command, especially for folks in wheelchairs, biological needs are paramount concern for the animals. Like we can do something like that. We can do some of the fun stuff around like is chewing a problem, is not chewing, you know, do you want to give your dog some kind of engagement there? That's one thing. The other thing is if you want to go way back to the futurist conversation, imagine like I just talked about what we can figure out from dogs just for the normal training behaviors, whether it's like sit down, you know, recall, like you can detect difference in motion. What if you want to train behaviors that are just for medical diagnosis? So like that weird, like turning the dog's neck in one way and like capturing that behavior over time, or moving the dog back into a position it not normally is. But there's so many, and that, I'm giving you this example as a counterintuitive thing we can do without talking about the entire roadmap. But if you have this two-way interaction and you have infinite time and the ability to slowly shape different behaviors and then build on behaviors on top of behaviors, there are a number of things you can do. I've talked a little bit about the medical ones. I haven't talked about the more advanced communication specifically, like whether it's animal choice or a variety of other things you can do. But there's so much in white space, and there's so much kind of green field once you have a device that can have a conversation with a dog you love. I'll leave it there.
I was even thinking like the military and police applications, like once this gets to the point where you could start training police dogs, bomb sniffing dogs, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Like you could automate that process. You could really, you know, you could scale a larger group of pet training with these higher level
manpower, dogs. Manpower. And you know, so just actually unlimited time.
So totally agree. And counterintuitively, one of the things that's actually the most stressful for those dogs is we're actually pretty familiar with those. Paul is also the chairman of the International Working Dog and Breeding Association, so we know that field very well. And we would love to help out with service animals and those like it. One of their biggest challenges actually, not for service dogs who are homed in kind of volunteer homes, but there are many schools where dogs are in a big kennel facility where they're left alone for a lot of the day. Yeah. And they lose like 30 to 50% of all dogs throughout the program just with kind of anxiety out, because they're very high energy dogs. Like they need that engagement. But it's prohibitively expensive to have humans do that type of engagement. And so they often go unattended. Like just providing that kind of engagement with the side benefit of training would be massively valuable. So it's something that we're excited about too. It's a field like, unlike kind of our first adopter consumers, it's going to take a little bit longer. They adopt new tools very slowly and you kind of have one or two shots at it. And we actually have some advisors who are leaders in that field as well, in addition to Paul, but like we're being very careful about when we do that, because we know we'll have just like kind of one or two shots on goal if we want to move quickly.
Yeah. Well, you guys are working like I'm so excited to watch where you guys go. We would love to have you on again. One last question.
Shoot.
Is it going to be like a subscription model?
Yeah.
Like what's the...
Yeah, so think of it like you asked about rough pricing. So like it's going to be a high-end product first. I want to make sure we set that expectation. We're going to make it... The part of the reason is because if we do that, we can make it more affordable for everyone much faster. Counterintuitively, just like Tesla or just like the other companies, right?
Yeah, there's also more features, you know, that you're going to be rolling out. You have the companion coach. You have the app. You know, it's not like you're paying for the, you know, it's not like you're paying for the device and that's it.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
There's more to it.
It's an entire service.
I love the fact that you can just like through sheer magic be like, hey, we're going to teach your dog this next week.
Yeah.
And just boom, just push it out.
Can
owners like sort of like accept and, you know, sort of go through the catalog and select which ones they want to work on the dog?
Yeah. So right now we have kind of a core curriculum that we suggest everyone goes through because it's like the fundamentals.
Yeah.
But along the way, we have different flavors of teaching the same thing if you have preferences. So like our coaches have access to like this whole entire backend system we call the Companion Coach Console, where like they literally have drop downs of like 100 different activities that they can give you to practice these certain things.
That's
so it's designed to be like you are going to get the same great experience. Like 80 or 90% of all dogs will share this part of the experience, but then this 10 or 20% is really going to be personalized to you and your dog through the companion coach. And like in terms of pricing, like I mentioned, I don't want to say it's like expensive and then just leave it there. It is expensive, but think of this like in terms of value, we want it to be looked at as a screaming deal in terms of it's like think of like the recurring service to be like a dog walk a week. It's like we want it to be like in that kind of price range where like it compares insanely well to dog walkers, to trainers, to day boarding.
Yeah.
Like it's way lower over time than any form of those kind of engagement activities. And it's in the convenience of your own home. It has data and we have like
more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we want it to be seen as a no-brainer. We think it will be when we publicly share the pricing to everyone, and we're starting to, we're doing that privately with users under a privacy agreement.
Yeah. It sounds to me like it'd probably come out to probably cheaper than some of the San Francisco dog trainers.
Yeah.
10 sessions, that's $2,500. That's, you know what I mean? It's going to be, I think it sounds to me like this is a fantastic investment for the well-being of your pet at the end of the day. It's going to be beneficial for their health at the end of I'm excited. I can't wait to test this thing out.
It's evolutionary too. You know, it's not like you're going to get this product and that's it. You know, it as the years go by, as the updates roll in, you know, everything else, you
exactly.
know, the value is added.
Well, this is also the creation of a new space. This is, you know, Peter
First
Thiel talks
congratulations,
about.
Congratulations, by the way. First
zero
to
market. One.
I mean, that's tough because you don't have anything else to base it on. You know, it's like, well, let's look
it's
at.
It's a long
let's,
journey.
Let's see what our competitors are doing. Let's see what they're doing and let's adjust. No, like first to market, you're creating
and you have
a new
so
category.
Much, so much freedom around it too since you're first to market. And, you know, it's super, super interesting. And
Thanks,
the way
guys.
You explain everything, honestly, very. Very concise. We're nerding out, and we're probably going to continue nerding out
cool.
for the next week.
I'm glad I can inspire some nerding out. I had a blast.
That's what we're all about here.
Cool. I love it. I got to drop here. I think we're a couple minutes over, but I really appreciate the time, guys. I'd love to chat more in the future. Like, we'll be doing a bunch of Clubhouse stuff too. I think we're probably going to start doing like every couple of weeks. We'll probably do some kind of live podcast or live something with our broader advisory board, like some of the folks I mentioned. Would love to have you guys on from a tech perspective. And thanks so much for having me on. And thanks so much for creating
absolutely.
Kind of a forum and a channel for folks to talk about some of these things.
Absolutely. We were so happy to have you. Now, before you go, where can everybody find you and how can they, you know, get in touch?
Cool. Joincompanion.com.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Enjoy the
video. All right.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys. Again, have a wonderful rest of your week. Have a great fourth.
Have a good one.
John, thank you so much.
Of course. Catch you later.